Welcome to the Blue Stocking Circle podcast, Lady Nerds on Popular Culture. We're your hosts, Ashley,
B,
and Grisel.
And this is episode 2, Firefly and Serenity. Before we start, you should know this podcast is unapologetically rife with spoilers. You've been warned. In today's episode, we'll be discussing the 2002 TV series Firefly and the 2005 film Serenity, a sci-fi western set in outer space. We'll share our origin stories, do some shipping, and share some highly recommended reading. Let's jump in and head right out to the black.
So after we did not provide a summary last time, we remembered this time that we need to tell you what this story is about. So this is your newbie summary. Firefly is a space opera western about a ragtag team of misfits making their way through the frontier of space while trying to stay away from the Alliance's reach. Laws get bent, things blow up, but our heroes always come out on top.
And as the resident expert, I can say that that is a perfect definition of what the show is. Okay, so moving on to our origin stories, I'll start. And I actually saw the movie before I saw the TV series. The movie was on sale at Target, and I'm a big sci-fi fan. So I was like, you know what? I'll give it a try. It's on clearance. What'll it hurt? As soon as I finished, I drove right back to Target to pick up the series and binge-watched the entire thing over 2 days.
When was it that you saw it? Like, was it long after the show had come out?
The movie had come out. See, so if it was on the clearance section, the movie had come out in 2005. It was in Target, probably 2006. Okay. That sounds about right.
For those listeners who don't have a nearby Target, it's basically a store that has all the things.
Oh, Target is magic, yes.
It will steal your money.
I don't have a Firefly origin story before this podcast, which I think is really weird because I used to watch every other science fiction and fantasy series on Fox, the television network on which it aired in the U.S., around that time. My beloved Futurama, for example, The X-Files, even through the Dage and Reyes years.
Which is more loyalty than I had.
Dark Angel, John Doe, Wonder Falls, pretty much everything. So the fact that I didn't watch Firefly tells me either it was very poorly marketed or it was not marketed at all. I would probably never have seen the series if it weren't for this podcast due to my aversion of westerns and space operas, but I liked it, so thanks, Ashley. Oh,
you're so welcome.
So I do remember when Firefly came out, and if my date served me right and my memory recall is correct, I was probably too deep into schoolwork and was not really watching television. So I went through a phase where I basically eschewed all TV for a while because I was that nerd. So there was a period of time where I wasn't really keeping up with seasons or what was going on. And this was the dark ages before everything was streamable. So there was no way for me to access this on a binge. So it never really sparked my interest. I never actually got around to watching it. That said, my boyfriend has been trying to get me to watch this ever since we started dating, which is now going on 9 years.
Wow.
And he was very concerned and surprised when I said, can I borrow your copies of Firefly and Serenity? And he was like, why do you want to watch this all of a sudden? So there has been a lot of discussion. I've basically previewed all that I will be discussing today with him.
Okay, so we will thank him.
So there you go.
Using him as a sounding board.
You have to deal with it first.
Okay, so then we can just jump right into our ship wars. After the series ended, we were left with one solid married couple and two kind of will-they, won't-they, on-again, off-again type of couples. After the movie ended, things changed again. Do you guys have any thoughts? Were you rooting for any particular couple? Personally, I actually love Wash and Zoe.
Psychic, though? That sounds like something out of science fiction.
We live in a spaceship, dear.
So?
And I actually really like the really odd love triangle, if you want to call it that, between the two of them and Mal. Because you have to have love triangles in TV shows. But this is such a weird one. Zoe and Mal have absolutely no romantic chemistry, no romantic entanglements, no romantic history, nothing. It's just that she's so ingrained as a part of her personality, the fact that he is her commanding officer and that she needs to listen to him, mm-hmm. that I can see how Wash is sometimes like, there's this other man in our relationship and what are you doing? And that was a whole, you know, plot in two of the episodes. Mm-hmm. So I loved watching that because it was just so much fun. And the whole part where they're like, take me now, we must take each other. And even you feel the awkwardness,
yeah.
when they're trying to do it and they're trying not to laugh because it's so weird. my favorite love triangle in all of history.
So how do we want to go about this one?
I know you have thoughts.
I have a lot of thoughts. Okay, I have many thoughts, many of which will carry over into other parts of this discussion. I liked the dynamic between Zoe and Wash. I felt that was a realistic portrayal of a relationship. I would have wanted to see more. Obviously, the show got canceled, so we could never know.
It's hard to judge a lot because we only had the 14.
My favorite episode. I have thoughts that I will share about my feelings about the whole thing throughout. But my favorite episode was Out of Gas, I believe is the title, which is the one where it's all like Mal's recollections of how they all met.
Yes.
So I liked that. I thought it was kind of like a funny origin. I wish they would have gone into more of those character setups. And I'm sure that had the show continued, that would have maybe been revealed. But that's where like Wash and Zoe meet, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so setting that up, I thought it was a good setup for that relationship. I didn't get so much of the triangle in a sense of a romantic triangle, definitely, but there was like the tension of the third wheel.
Right.
And like, who do I show my loyalty to in this scenario where, you know, we're all in danger, my husband or my commander? So I got that sense out of it, and, you know, how that kind of affected Zoe as somebody who's a subordinate, but also a wife, and their tension between that.
That was an interesting dynamic. I thought so as well. But what did you think of Wash's jealousy and how it expressed itself in that episode, War Stories?
I don't remember it.
I mean, I actually liked how he did that because he's kind of between a rock and a hard place because he does feel jealous and I could see how he'd feel it. But at the same time, he has to acknowledge that what she's doing is listening to the ship's commander, mm-hmm. which is what she has to do. And he can't even throw up to her face anything like, oh, well, you're cheating on me, because it's nothing like that. Like you said, mm-hmm. it's just purely a loyalty kind of thing. So I see how he did it. And you know what? Wash is not the most grown-up character. Mm-hmm. I mean, none of them are real grown-ups. All of them have growing up to do. But Wash is kind of, he plays with his dinosaurs, and he juggles, or he knows people that juggled geese. So I see how he's going to kind of act out like a five-year-old and say, you know what? We're going to do things my way, and I want this to happen because I'm annoyed and no one else will listen to me, so I have control and this is going to happen. I get it. I think that's really in character with what Wash would do to try and kind of take back control over the situation.
So I will say one of the reasons why I probably don't remember it, and this is one of the issues I had with the show, is that I felt that a lot of the dialogue was really stilted and the acting was a little underdeveloped. And there were moments where I kind of was like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be taking this seriously. Are they being sarcastic? Is this a real emotion? Are they playing? So I couldn't tell sometimes, like, what their real emotional response to things was, because I couldn't tell if I was supposed to be laughing or not. And I had that issue. So maybe what you guys saw as the jealousy, I was just like, I don't know what's happening here or why I should be, like, concerned or not. So I had that reaction a little bit.
Is this your first Whedon show?
No.
I was say that's very much a hallmark of Whedon. I think of Whedon shows where a lot of the quick dialogue, the repartee, and you're kind of like, are they masking their feelings?
That, like, so when I first started watching it, and I was going to dive into it a little bit later in, like, the catharsis corner, but when I first started watching it, I almost felt like it was, I mean, I was very into Buffy, and that was not, like, you know, the best writing ever, but I was a Buffy fan. I was never an Angel fan, so my experiences with Wiener are, like, I liked Buffy, I didn't like any of his other stuff. I felt like the writing does all the things that, in writing classes, they tell you not to do, which is, like, the dialogue is trying too hard to be that Western, or that slightly 18th century, or 17th century, or whatever century they're trying to emulate, because the dialogue goes in all kinds of directions. Sometimes it's like very futuristic. Sometimes it's very outdated. A lot of times they're not using contractions and it seems unnatural. Like the speech patterns seem unnatural to me. Like when Mal is talking or when Zoe's responding to him. And I'm like, I don't know if this is the director's fault or the writer's fault or where it's coming from. And that's kind of where I had a hard time following it because I couldn't tell emotionally who I was supposed to be invested in because I couldn't follow why they were interacting in certain ways. It was just like my reaction to it. I ran this all by the boyfriend and he was like, what? What are you talking about? Yeah, that I don't know what's going on here. Like, I can't follow this dialogue and take it seriously at times, and I don't know if I should be. So I had that.
I think that's fair. I'm trying to rewatch like bits in my head as we're talking. I think you're absolutely right. I think with me, I kind of picked up on that the first time I watched it, but I was so like in love with the characters that I chalked that off to that's just how they would speak at this point X amount of years in the future and on. So I kind of tried to use the context of the show to write it off. And I've never taken like writing classes or English classes. Like, yeah, you know, I'm much more of a lay person when it comes to that. But you're right. I think there's a lot of... I mean, that's still
to what you're saying. In the way that like, I know that I myself am hyper aware of how writers write. So I was like, it's me. Like if I had maybe watched this 10 years ago, I probably would not have picked up on this. But I couldn't turn it off as I was watching it. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. Should I be sad or laughing? I don't know what's happening.
As the other newbie, I had been warned that this was a Whedon trait. I have never seen any other of his shows. So I did find it a little bit jarring at first. But then I got into the rhythm of the dialogue as the episodes went on. And I bought into it wholeheartedly. But then again, my superpower is suspension of disbelief. So I was just immersed in that world.
It improved with time later in the season. And knowing that I got canceled later in the season and that it wasn't until, like, episode 8 where I was like, okay, I can follow this now. I was like, well, that would have sucked had I watched this as a person at the time.
So what about the inclusion of Mandarin into the English speech? What did you think of that?
I read some stuff on that because I also slightly spoiled myself just because of the way I was feeling. And I was like, I can't be the only person who reacted this way to this. To the internet, we will go. And then I read a couple of articles that did comment on that and how real Mandarin speakers say that it's absolute gibberish what they're saying and makes no sense in any language whatsoever, which seems weird. It's almost like the people who get a tattoo and be like, it says good fortune and it really means like I eat dog or something like totally offensive.
That's actually kind of tied into what I was going to bring up in Catharsis Corner, which is that idea that this is supposed to be an Anglo-Sino alliance, and there are no Chinese, Korean, Japanese, Asian characters in the main cast. I think even in the show in general, there's a few more, I think in Serenity, as background characters, but you don't see them
in the foreground.
And that's one of those things where I love the show, but I'm kind of like, you know what? You couldn't have done that. Would it have been that hard to actually use real Mandarin?
I do feel it suffers from being a product of its time, and I feel like that's also one of the issues I had, where like looking back on it, maybe we're more woke now, like maybe we know that you can do better on television.
Counterpoint, Ghost in the Shell.
Well, that's a whole other hot mess. But it's definitely something that I think nobody would have noticed it in 2002. Like, people would probably not have cared or complained. I feel like we're more aware of it now, and there's more response to it, whereas I think Joss Whedon wouldn't have thought twice about it at the time. Like, nobody would have maybe protested and said, like, hey, what are you doing here?
It was really blatant. Even Simon and River's surname, were they intended to be Chinese characters that were cast differently?
Yeah, Tam.
And if their parents are not, I mean, in the one episode you see their parents, they don't seem to be of Chinese descent. No. So you can't even be like, oh, well, maybe it's just like a mixed type of thing. No, because there's nowhere in there.
I think it's Ray Bradbury. I could be wrong. It might be Piers Anthony. I don't remember if it's one of the two. It's a book I read when I was in high school. As I was watching this, I was remembering reading that book. And that book goes into the direction of like, in this far-flung future, everybody has mixed. Mm-hmm. All the people have come together. And there's a lot of, like, the I Ching involved in the book. But there's a mix of, like, Asian... But everybody's brown. Like, essentially, because we've all mixed, everyone is brown. Except for, like, 5 kids that are the one purebloods. And they're kept in, like, a zoo, almost. Like, it's a weird futuristic dystopia thing, almost. But more like a utopia that didn't... I don't know. It's a really good book. I read it in high school. I don't remember which writer wrote it. I'll look it up eventually. But this reminded me of that. And that was my sticking point with it, where I was like, if it was this far in the future and we've mixed with the Chinese, shouldn't everybody look like... Shouldn't we all kind of have features that have come together and melded if it's been this long and we've all terraformed these lands and just recolonized them?
I mean, I will say I did like the fact that Mandarin, I know it's not real Mandarin, but the idea that you kind of pick up other words from this language that's so prevalent in your culture and use it, because... slight spoiler alert for my Pokemon cultural heritage, I do a lot of that with Spanish. So yeah. That Spanglish that people talk about, I do it all the time. I don't do it here because I'm trying to be a grown-up and, you know, a podcasting person. But I'll throw Spanish words in. There's mm-hmm. some phrases that I don't know how to say in English. I can only say them in Spanish because there's no way to express that same feeling in English. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that was a good attempt mm-hmm. on Whedon's part to kind of be like, okay, well, if this is happening, this is how people would talk. So I did like that because mm-hmm. I felt very, oh, okay, that's not a bad thing that I use Spanglish because they're using whatever mix of, you know, Mandarin and English, whatever you would call that. But I do wish that was actually real Mandarin instead mm-hmm. of nonsense Mandarin.
I think it was meant to be real Mandarin. They just couldn't pronounce it correctly.
Oh, I thought they were just saying ridiculous things. You think they're actually trying
That's what I read, that it is real Mandarin. Like, yes. It's actual Mandarin. They can't pronounce it, obviously. But the phrases themselves make no sense.
Did they not have a consultant?
That's what I said! Yeah! Like, why couldn't they find a person to just give them real phrases?
It's also a clever way to get around the censors.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I love watching it with subtitles sometimes, because I watch the show fairly often. So there'll be sometimes I watch with subtitles and I kind of pause and just so you can see what they're saying. And they're really inventive curses. I'm like, man, I want to use that because it just sounds cool.
My version didn't have subtitles. I had no idea what they were saying half the time.
Oh, you can put it on with subtitles, and I can't even begin to tell you the things that they say to each other. Yeah, it's worth it if you ever do a rewatch to put the subtitles on.
Yeah, I didn't have subtitles either, but I did wonder.
Are we in Catharsis Corner?
I think we are. Conversations have melded.
I have a pet peeve. What was the deal with Book? I had been spoiled about Wash thanks to the internet in these many years and how people do not let that go. But Book was a complete surprise to me, and I can't believe they just killed him off without explaining his backstory after giving so many tantalizing hints over the series. What was the deal with him?
So, if it makes you feel better, there are comics that have been released since the movie came out.
Spoil me.
There was one that's actually after the movie, so it goes into Lillian Wash's baby, and she it's a girl.
Don't spoil me that much.
But you go, I mean... There you go. And then
there's
to
an
that,
extended universe.
There's an extended universe, just how he did with Buffy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they did have one that goes into Book's backstory. And essentially what it is that...
I think called like the Preacher's Tale.
The Preacher's Tale. Mm-hmm. He grew up poor. He becomes involved in the Alliance as an assassin because it's a way to kind of get out of his neighborhood. And mm-hmm. things happen and he becomes disillusioned with the Alliance and killing. And says, you know what, I'm out, thanks. And he retreats to the Abbey and becomes a preacher. And then I think the comic kind of ends with him deciding to go on a trip and brings you up to the beginning of a Firefly.
I would have traded 3 or 4 episodes for that story.
Yeah, I found that like some of the side characters were more compelling and I wanted more about them. And I had actually, in my preview discussion with the boy, I was like, is there not an extended universe to this? Because if there is such a fan base, you know, there's like extended universes for like Magic the Gathering. Some novelization somewhere for each of these characters. And he was like, yeah, there's all these comics that come out every so often. You know, there's like a graphic novel. And I guess not as much. I'm kind of surprised that there isn't more of an extended universe, that it hasn't gone into like full-blown
It's definitely, you know, like not Star Wars
and stuff. Like it hasn't reached that level. And I'm kind of surprised by that. I figure there must be like a million fan fictions. Like, just makes sense.
If you ever want just to waste a good afternoon of your time, go onto fanfiction.net and put in Firefly.
There's like hundreds of them.
You pick any 2 characters you want, any 3 characters, any character, and you have options for days of what to read. So, yeah, but Book was, I kind of had a feeling that they were going with that on the end of the show. The way that Early treated him, if you notice. He knocks Mal out with a quick kick to the head. Mal's ex-military.
Every so often he's exercising.
He's exercising.
And he's doing, like, stuff. Or they'll say, like, you gotta tell us your story someday. And it's like, yeah, there has to be some, like, more violent backstory.
Yeah, so I kind of figured that was going to be where...
And that God doesn't have any issues with kneecaps or something like that.
He's not wrong. About kneecaps. He is fuzzy on the subject of kneecaps. You cannot accuse the man of lying. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I know that now. I wish I could have seen that episode.
Yeah, actually wish they had done that even more and done Preacher's Tale and then done Companion's Tale and then done...
Yes, that would be great.
I don't know what we call Jane, the Meathead's tale. Well, the Muscles
tale. I felt like that Janestown kind of did that a little bit. Like, it kind of gave you the backstory to Jane in some ways.
It does.
I don't feel like there's much to him.
But I kind of, you see, Jane's one of those characters where, I don't want to say I love to hate because I don't hate him, but he just irritates me. He's a meathead. So I kind of wish that there was some backstory where, like, how did you grow up? Your mom obviously loves you. You have a younger brother who you send money to help. So you can't just be like this heartless, sex-driven, whoa, whoa, whoa kind of person. Mm-hmm. How did you get there? It doesn't have to be a long comic. I'm okay. It doesn't have to be, you know, like series 1-7 graphic novel tie-in. Just like one or two issues.
The one shot.
Yeah, that's all I need for Jane. But I wish they had gone through and done that with all of them. Because there's so much. And again, I think it's a product of the show being canceled. Mm-hmm. There's a whole backstory with Inara that didn't get in there. Like, there's a lot of stuff that,
yeah, there's a lot more context that they could have given, and, mm-hmm. and yeah, I'm sure it's just, you cancel a show in its first season, you never got that chance,
right? And I guess if we're talking about Inara, we can go into the feminist rants.
Go right in.
Time to smash the patriarchy with a good old feminist rant, because there's a lot that we can talk about here.
So much. So
I guess the first thing to talk that I wanted to talk about, and it's particularly germane to watching Firefly, an article came out about a month or so ago where Joss Whedon's ex-wife wrote it, and she published an essay, and essentially what she was doing was calling him a hypocrite. She said that in his personal life, he didn't really live up to the feminist ideals that he espouses and that everyone likes to ascribe to him. And it's not the point of this segment to either praise or condemn or make any sort of judgment on Joss Whedon's personal life. This is more kind of a question of, what do you do when you hear something you might not like about the author or creator of a work that you love? Do you feel guilty about still enjoying the work? Do you push that work away? The same thing kind of happened with Ender's Game, mm-hmm. where, you know, Orson Scott Card is a very particular person. Ender's Game, I love Ender's Game, but even when I pick it up, I kind of like, oh, I feel a little
guilty.
Yeah, I feel a little guilty. So what do we think? Did you have a problem? I mean, knowing that, I don't know if you knew it before, but did you... Would that change your...
I think it was right around the time that we decided we were doing this episode that came out.
I think so.
And
yes.
I remember, like, just seeing a blip on it on Twitter, and I didn't follow it very closely because I didn't want to get too into it at the time and, like, mm-hmm. have it in any way influence my viewing. So I tried to stay away from it and only got the barest idea of what it was that was going on. So I don't still know exactly what the full story accounts to, because I did avoid it until now. I think it goes into different directions. There's more that we know about our authors now. And I think because our authors are so heavily invested in self-promotion and having social media presences, mm-hmm. there's so much more of their personal lives that is getting out there, and that can influence your understanding of their work. In literary theory circles, there's this idea that the author is dead. And that can kind of like allow you to read a work and completely suspend any idea that you have about what the author is involved in. Their opinion doesn't matter, their intention doesn't matter, you just read it, you read the work based on its own merit. But then you have people like Roman Polanski or Woody Allen who get accused of terrible things. It's like, well, do you watch these movies and not associate it with a potential rapist or a potential child molester? Or, you know, it kind of goes into these two very complicated directions. I enjoyed Buffy. So as far as a Joss Whedon fandom, I was only ever really into Buffy. And that has issues. I can look back now and see issues with, like, you know, losing your virginity and your boyfriend goes and turns into a psychopath. Like, what is that about? Like, what does that say about being a woman?
Yeah, it's really problematic.
So, that's problematic. But at the same time, there was a lot of female empowerment that show proposed, whether it was intentionally Joss Whedon's plan to promote this idea of female empowerment. It also came out at the same time as, like, the Spice Girls and girl power. And, like, that was a big message that was going out. So is it because Buffy was also a product of its time and there was already this different movement growing out of it and the fans took it and made what they did of it? Or is it that Joss Whedon in some way intended it to be? I kind of feel like it's the fans that make it. I feel like in this show it's probably the fans that have really taken Firefly and given it a life beyond what Joss Whedon came up with.
That's fair.
I found a great article on that point about how Buffy belongs to the fans now, how it's been so many years and there have been so many fan interpretations and discussion that essentially she's no longer a creation of Joss Whedon's. Mm-hmm. She's now gone over to the fandom and it's the fandom who has made Buffy who she is. The article is called Joss Doesn't Get to Ruin Buffy. She doesn't belong to him anyway. We'll post it in the show notes, but it's not just about Buffy. It's about Zoe and Kaylee and Inara and basically everyone in the Firefly fandom mm-hmm. as well. She belongs to the fans now, so they all do.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think so, yeah, because I feel like if you just limit it to what's on the screen, you're just given very infantilized characters, and you need to read into them a little bit more to give them some real depth, because, like, there has to be more to Kaylee than just the girl who occasionally wears little pigtails and runs around with her little umbrella and flirts with guys to get them on the ship.
But you know, like, I love Kaylee. She's one of my favorite characters. And yes, I do see that. But I also see how she's introduced in Out of Gas in that mm-hmm. flashback as having sex with the then mechanic.
While wearing pigtails and then running home to tell her folks that she's joining the ship. That is weird. It's what 30 Rock calls a sexy baby trope. You cannot have sexy babies. You pick.
Yes. Babies are not sexy.
But, yes, completely right. But you know what? She's a character who is shown having one night stand sex, however you want to, you know, I'm not sure what the relationship was with Bender, but having sex and enjoying it, and no one really judges her for it. She never gets any snide remarks. Mm-hmm. She tells that story about when she was like 14 or 15. She was having sex with someone who ended up being 14 or 15 and her dad was mad, but she wasn't ashamed of the story. She was telling it for laughs to River, who was kind of looking at her like she was crazy. But yes, she mm-hmm. is in some ways infantilized, but she's allowed to have a sex life. Mm-hmm. Zoe's allowed to have a sexual life. A lot of times married women on shows aren't, you know what I mean? But you show her, or she's seen having sex. I know someone was talking about, like, the male gaze and how in that one shot of her, it's the gaze on her and not on Wash. Hopefully if they had gone on, there would have been a repeat. But I kind of like how they show these characters not just living in a bubble, like having these backgrounds. And of course, we can just talk all about Inara and the morality. Mal calls her a whore, but no one else does. And is that Mal just being a jerk because he's
a weird repression?
Yeah, he has repressed feelings for her. I mean, it's hard for me.
I had issues with that whole
storyline
basically.
I did too, which is why I kept very quiet during the ship wars segment.
No, but let's
I think it goes back to the discussion we had on Solace, how you talked about yourself, the Mr. Darcy, and how he's influenced mm-hmm. everyone after that, in terms that there's an annoyance and an arousal at the same time. I felt that here, but he never respected her. Again, I go back to that.
I had issues with that, too. Yeah, he never... I know that you had problems viewing Heart of Gold. Was that what it's called?
Yes. No, that wasn't it.
Was that not it?
The episode was Our Mrs. Reynolds.
Oh, that's a whole other issue.
But
Heart of Gold presents the idea of, like...
Oh, I literally had problems watching
You literally, had, problems
literally
watching.
Had problems.
Because my DVD skipped.
Because you couldn't see it.
Yeah, technical issues watching
it. Did you finish watching it?
I watched the last half. Okay. My DVD didn't work for the first half.
Did you watch up to the part where Mal has affairs with one of the ladies?
I watched the part where Inara's oldest friend, Nandi, dies, and it was made all about Mal's man pain instead of Inara and what she's going through with the loss of her friend.
Because he affairs with her friend, who is also of her nature.
And then she goes to her room to cry.
And then she goes to her room to cry.
Oh my goodness, yes, I had issues with that.
So there were issues with that. But it's like, okay... And I think Ashley had put this in her notes. Like, he's always saying that his work is honest. And it's like, well, how is smuggling any more honest than being a sex worker? A legalized sex worker, according to this world. It's totally fine. Why is he always tearing into her? Is it because this is her job and he would rather have her to himself for whatever weird possessive reasons? I don't know. But yeah, in the first episode when he calls her a whore, I was like, what is this? Why is this happening?
And you do see kind of the pushback. No one else calls her that.
No.
Kaylee is like,
Everybody else kind of like admires her. She's almost like a geisha. Like, that's what I equated her position to. She's honored in certain ways. She's revered in some ways. She's also still just a sex object, too. So, troubles.
Going back to the male gaze, I was the one. A little background into our process. We have a Google Doc where we put our notes. Very generic, but just talking points before we start the episode. And I was the one who put male gaze 101.
Male gaze.
Yes, there you go.
If someone asked me what the male gaze was, I would just lead them to the show, basically. The Zoe and Wash post-coital scene?
Yes, that's the
that
one.
That was definitely a male gaze perspective. Mm-hmm. The camera zooms in on her body from toes to head, and Wash was completely ignored. The focus was entirely on her. That could have been shot a million different ways, and they chose the male gaziest way to shoot that. Mm-hmm. Same with Inaro. Those scenes were done for titillation. They were not done in an empowering way. Mm-hmm. They were not done to show any character development or what she's going through, what she's thinking in those moments. Those were done to please the male viewers.
Probably a lot of the viewers they expected would
were
have
in
been
that
male.
Demographic, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was one issue I had with the show. I never felt that it was written for a female audience in terms of the direction of the camera.
Mm-hmm. As compared to, yeah. Have you guys seen The Handmaid's Tale?
No, but I've read the book.
I've avoided it just because I know too much about the book and I'm not into... I can't get into that headspace right now.
Same here.
But
I
fair.
Will say, the day that I saw the last episode to this was the day that the new Star Trek aired. And that was such a change. And I was like, oh, thank you for having proper female women characters.
Well, I ask because I think it kind of goes back to, is it a product of its time? Because, yes, The Handmaid's Tale
is
hard to watch. But especially the first three episodes that were shot and directed by women, the gaze there is completely different. You're mm-hmm. seeing everything from a very specific gaze. You're literally trapped underneath the bonnet yeah. wings that the characters were in that show. So it's interesting talking about that and then comparing that to a show that's also about sex in a lot of ways, but the gaze is completely different depending on the time and even the person who's doing the mm-hmm. the shooting. Now, do you guys like Inaro as a person? Like, how do you come down on the whole, she's a licensed companion, and this is a thing that's allowed in this world?
I didn't feel the show went, like, book. They didn't give her enough of a background for me to have a strong opinion on her either way. So there were characters that I liked. Salmon and River, they got their backstories, I think, more than any other character. Mm-hmm. I ended up really liking both of them because we got to see them through the background. We got to see their motivations, their relationship from childhood. I thought it was an interesting addition to their backstories throughout the series. And I liked Kaylee because you're meant to like Kaylee from the yeah. first
you
moment.
You can't not like Kaylee. Exactly. It's hard.
She's harmless.
She's,
but you have to like...
She's the widow of yeah. this of the series.
More than that, she's kind of an object in the sense that whenever something bad happens, threaten Kaylee. Let's mm-hmm. get the audience invested by threatening Kaylee and see what happens to her.
Yeah.
Without you being invested in her surviving the pilot, you can't enjoy that first episode because the whole drama of the there pilot was... is will Simon let her live yeah. or will she die?
There and he does that on one episode with the bounty hunter, and that really bothered me.
Oh, yes. And are we supposed to find him charming? Are we supposed to yeah, find him likable after he makes such a comment?
I mean, this is just me. I love that episode because I love
what happens. I think he was supposed
happens.
To be portrayed as a sociopath.
I think so. I don't think you're supposed to find him charming. I think you're supposed to realize how dangerous he mm-hmm. is. And even more so because he can deliver his threats in such a calm, almost pleasant kind of way. Mm-hmm. It's not a reaver who comes in here raging and wants to tear your mm-hmm. skin off. It's, I'm going to do this and this and this
it's
if you do
rational,
not do this for me. The very,
the
rational,
very rational threat.
Yes. Yeah, so I think it scared me even more. Watching the rest of it because I was like, ooh.
It was disturbing to me.
It was disturbing. But Joss Whedon makes a point, I forget where I read it or I saw it, but he makes a point of saying that whenever he wanted to create drama on the show, he put Kaylee in danger specifically, just like he did with Willow on Buffy. Those were the characters that, okay, we need to get the audience invested, like you said, we're going to throw them under the bus because everyone likes them.
So I had the opposite trajectory with her. I started out not really liking Simon and River much, and then I grew liking them more and more, the more we got to see of them. With Kaylee, it was the opposite, because she felt like an object of emotional manipulation. And I felt like I was being played with, like, want to have drama? Let's throw Kaylee in danger. And I
put
did not like that feeling.
Train.
I like her, and I don't like you threatening her constantly in order to get me to be invested in the show.
Okay.
So that's how I felt about her. And then for the other characters, I did not like Mal, and I did not like Jane. I appreciate them as characters, but there's no way I connect this to people. Just from the things they say and the way they act. But there was enough about them that I was able to get a read on them, and that read was that I did not like them. And then Inaro was one person who I wish we'd known more about her book as well. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you told me his backstory. I wish we could have seen that. And then who am I missing? Oh, Zoe. I really like Zoe. I wish she had gotten more of a, I don't know,
her
backstory.
Her backstory, yeah. Because how did she end up as a brown coat?
I would watch the Captain Zoe spinoff. So, get on that.
Oh, I could totally watch that. I would watch the hell out of that. That'd be a good show.
And Wash, he was another one that I wasn't different to. I wasn't really moved when what happened to him.
Oh.
You weren't Mold. Oh, no. He was a leaf on the wind, and then he wasn't a leaf on the
wind.
Maybe it's because I was spoiled from the start, and I knew, don't get attached to this guy.
That could be, yeah. That's fair.
Maybe his jealousy just rubbed me the wrong way in that War Stories episode. I agree with you. He was very immature, and not in a good way.
So, my confession is that I did not like the show.
Oh.
At all. And I kept having... There were a lot of conversations about this with the boy, because I was like, they're going to hate me. Because I'm going to be that person who gets all the trolls coming after
her. No, this is a safe space. We're not to express internet, our opinions.
All the internet trolls are going to come after me. So I couldn't get into any of the characters. Okay, so I was telling the boy about all my concerns and issues, and I just found that a lot of the characters to me were a little too flat. They felt like caricatures and just stereotypes of whatever type they were representing. Like, you've got Mal, who's like Han Solo, but not really, because I don't find him charming at all. And then you've got Zoe, who I feel should, even though she is his second, I feel like at this point they have enough history together that she should be able to get in some more bite, and she doesn't. Like, I kept feeling like the characters are falling flat. I did not like River at all, because I felt like it was too much of the mad woman in the attic stereotype. Like, what can you do to make this girl look like she's been brain damaged? Well, have her be a mouth breather and have her hair in her face all the time. I was like, why are they doing this? Like, I never felt that until the movie that anyone was ever in any real danger. And I do also think that it was probably a product of its time as well. People die a lot more on TV now.
Yes,
I feel so. I can forgive that. Like, every episode I was like, oh, they're just gonna be fine in the end, like, nobody's gonna die. It wasn't until the movie where you had suddenly people in real danger, and even then I felt like it was a very loose plot. Like, I didn't get convinced that this was all happening because of this one storyline with the Reavers. I was like, this doesn't really, I'm not buying this. So I couldn't get into it. I felt so bad because I knew that Ashley really liked this, and I was like, I'm gonna watch this, it's gonna be good. And I was like, I'm having such a hard time watching this.
Now you know how I felt during the Solas episode.
I feel like this is homework.
Oh no. Okay, well, I liked it. You did not tell me there would be ball gowns and sword fights. When I got to that episode, I was so excited.
I don't want
to
spoil that for you, because I know that's your thing. That's your thing. And I was like, there's one episode.
I did like that one episode, though.
I liked the tension in the first episode. When the Reavers came along, the show shifted dramatically in how it felt. I did feel a sense of tension that they were in danger. I wasn't sure if the characters were going to get killed off in the pilot or not. So for that first episode, I was tense. But then, as you say, later on, I got more comfortable. I really thought it was funny. And that's important to me. If a show makes me laugh, I am automatically on board. And it made me laugh a lot. The part with Crow being thrown into the jet engine. I lost it laughing.
And the next
at
guy,
that.
I'm good. I understand. Take going by the Niska. Yes. Same page.
So at that moment on, I was sold. I was there to enjoy the journey, even if I didn't. I agreed that some of the characters fell flat. And I thought, well, they only got 14 episodes, so I excused it in my mind as them being cut off because of the cancellation. But I did enjoy it, I think, overall. And as for River, I felt the same way you did. I was annoyed at the fact that she was an object. And by the way, there was no reason she had to be naked in that box. That's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
She could have been clothed in cryogenics. In any case, but then I was reading a recap and someone compared River to their child with special needs.
That's right.
And when I started seeing it through that lens, that's when I started liking Simon and River more. Because
that's,
it started
that's why I didn't like it. Because I felt like it was too much of, like, let's take all these characteristics that we associate with, like, autistic kids, especially, like, in the movie more so, when you have the flashbacks of, like, her, like, tapping her pen. Like, I worked with autistic kids for a bit, and they do a lot of that. And so I was like, they're taking these characteristics, and then they're damaging her brain and turning her... Like, I always suspected that she was in some way some sort of assassin, like, from the beginning, because they kind of, like, it just seemed a little obvious. And I was like, so they're taking this... probably autistic kid, because they implied she's really smart and she does these, like, tics and stuff, and they're damaging her brain, and then they're just tossing her out into this, like, really dependent relationship on her brother. Everybody talks around her.
Yes.
She just spits out random phrases, and so they always just, like, feel, like, scared by whatever random nonsense she's saying. So I felt like it was too much of the negative traits associated with kids that have special needs, and not in a good way. Is that how I felt about it?
I've never looked at it that way. I think it's a fair reading. I think you can read that. I like Simon River's relationship. I like that they show him as this person who's given everything up, but is kind of annoyed by it. Mm-hmm. Like in the one in Objects in Space where she's kind of walking, not really walking around the ship, mm-hmm. but she's listening to everyone, and she hears in Simon, I'd be there right now. He'd be at home on Ariel where he belongs as a doctor. So I like that they show, okay, there are sacrifices.
I thought they had moments where they humanized her more, but for a lot of it, I just felt like they were just setting her up to be like, hey, so this girl's brain damaged. And I didn't get too much there. Like, I felt they could have done more with that character.
I agree.
To make her more of a character. To make her, even if she is in some way, I hate to say it, like, she's just damaged goods in some way. Like, but that's kind of what they make her out to be. She could have been more than that as a character.
I think a lot of that, too, might come from they canceled the show early, and then they had the movie, which is great because you could tie up some loose ends, but if you had
a
5 or 6 season idea, plot arc for everyone, and then you only have 2 hours, I think kind of, for me, a lot of the issues I had with her were even more in the movie because they make her characterization changes.
Yeah,
they all change from the TV series to the movie.
Yes, it was so Hollywood. I like the show more than the movie.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I definitely like the show better.
The movie felt a little bit generic. Even the way the women were styled, Zoe's hair was loose in the movie, so was Kaylee's. In the show, they always had their hair picked up as they should, like a soldier and like a mechanic. You would have your hair in a bun or tied back, not loose and flowy like the Hollywood style. So the movie had a very different feel. It felt much more expensive than the show.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was good. But then at the same time, it lost some of its individualism, I thought. It had less of that Western feel and more of a straightforward space opera feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked the movie, but I thought the show had more of a quirky charm.
That's why I think the reason, and you're totally allowed to not like the show. That's okay. Not like, you know, I'll not challenge you to a duel afterwards. I love the show. I mean, yes, and I can see the problems with the characters. I can see the problems with development and all the world building we're talking about. But the show makes me laugh and it's fun and During shooting, the actors would sit around, instead of going to like their own personal dressing rooms, they'd all sit in the mess hall and just hang out there in between shoots.
The camaraderie was great between them.
I think that's what comes out. I really see like that the actors actually loved each other. So I look at it as this show about people who are immature, who are broken or damaged in whatever way, just they're all hot messes in their lives for whatever reason. And you know what? I like that because I can appreciate that because I'm a hot mess sometimes. So I like that these are people who don't really know what they're doing, but they're just trying to put one step forward and they make mistakes and they're sometimes really mean to each other. But you can tell that there's this current underlying, thank you. They really do care about each other. And I think that's what makes me come back to it so often because for all that, I don't really want to be on Serenity.
No.
Sometimes I'm like, oh, it would be fun to have a group of people that care about you that way. You know what I mean? So I don't want to be on there, but maybe like a day trip.
A day trip to space.
To space. That would be good.
I did like the group dynamic a lot. Favorite episodes? I'll go ahead and say mine was Ariel. I was so excited it was a heist, and I was so excited about how it was done. The one where they break into the hospital to steal the medical supplies. I enjoyed every second of that.
Ariel is my number one favorite, and Objects in Space is my number two favorite. Because I really just like the little bit of philosophy that gets into there. You know, what is her room? Is it a storeroom if it doesn't have her in it? What is its purpose? I kind of like throwing that in there. It was funny to see like this very, very scary bounty hunter who's got a Confederate name, by the way. And so whatever we want to read into that. But coming in here and having this discussion, well, he's very calmly training a gun on Simon.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what you think the nature of existence is. I appreciated that. So I like those two episodes. Which one did you like?
I'm still assuming that it was out of gas. It's the one where it starts with like Mal having been shot.
It is. Yes.
Because I was like, I think that was the name. So that's the one I liked. I liked that as a self-contained episode. I really liked that episode. I think because it did all the things that I wanted the show to do.
Got it.
Which was round out these characters more so.
It was a well-done episode and I would have liked it a lot more if I liked Mal. But it was very well-crafted.
Yeah, I like all of them. Those are my favorites.
So shall we rate Firefly? On a scale of 1 to 5 socks, let's start with the designated newbie, Grisel.
Aww. I give it 1 sock.
Oh.
I liked 1 episode.
As the other non-designated newbie, I give it 3.5 out of 5 socks for the series, and then 3 out of 5 for the movie.
Okay, I'm going to give the series 5 socks.
She is a little biased.
But I am biased. I will admit my bias. I will give the movie 4 socks because it's still in the universe. But I think on average, I think it's fair. We can give it a 3 out of 5.
That seems a good average.
None of us, the three of us.
We'll do the math, but that sounds good.
I think we can say it's a solid 3 out of 5 socks for Firefly and Serenity. So time for our reading recs. Depending on what you loved or didn't love, because there are things to not love about Firefly, there are a ton of options for what to read. If you like the mission-driven space opera kind of thing with complex characters, I really, really highly recommend Anne Leckie's Imperial Rats trilogy. And this is like a shameless plug because the first book, Ancillary Justice, in this trilogy is one of my 3 favorite novels, and she's one of those authors that anything that she reads is an automatic buy. But the characters are great, and it's very much space opera. Read that one. Leviathan Wakes by James S.A. Corey is actually the book series that's been recently turned into a TV show, The Expanse. The Expanse is based on this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really good. You've got hardscrabble individuals, and they're navigating between the ruling Earth government and outer planet revolutionaries in deep space. And you've got one mining ship who's probing into hidden secrets. Sounds kind of familiar. Really think that Firefly fans would like that one too.
My pick this time is admittedly not one that I love, since, as I said earlier, westerns and space operas aren't my preferred genres, but it is one that I consider essential reading in this genre. It's the classic space western A Princess of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs, which is, I will say, an amazing title, and Disney should not have changed it for the generic John Carter for the movie. In any case, it's the story of John Carter, who's a Civil War veteran who fought for the Confederacy and winds up on Mars, where he's caught up in another civil war there between the red and the green Martians. This work is essentially Firefly's grandfather, and John Carter might as well be Miles Asmunster. We didn't talk about how the brown coats were essentially the Confederacy.
Oh, yes.
But that's a whole 5-hour discussion that we didn't get into. As a side note, I read this book for the MOOC, or Massive Open Online Course, Fantasy and Science Fiction, The Human Mind, Our Modern World, which was taught by Professor Eric Rabkin on the Coursera platform. I did love this course, if not all the readings. Unfortunately, it doesn't appear to be available on Coursera anymore, but you can still find some of the lectures on YouTube, so if you too like taking classes in your spare time, you follow Hermione's, we'll post the link in the show notes.
So, as I was watching Firefly, one series consistently came to mind for me, and that was Leigh Bardugo's Six of Crows / Crooked Kingdom set, mostly because it has all the gray morality of Firefly, with a cast of complex characters that are often questionable in their actions and decisions. And while not a sci-fi or a space opera, it has that not-quite-our-world quality, and it just really reminded me of the show and the dynamic between the characters, where you've got, like, essentially a cast of crooks who are up to no good, but you love them for their badness.
I love those books, so yes. Those are awesome. Good recommendation.
You can find us at thebluestockingcircle.com. You can email us at thebluestockingcircle@gmail.com and find us anywhere on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, or Tumblr. Our handle is @bluesockscircle. Socks spelled S-O-X.
Cheers!
I realized the source of the clicking. It's your ring on the table.
Oh! Bam, done.
Oh, discoveries, that's so funny.
We're good.
That's your blooper.
That is our blooper. Mystery solved.